It's about 6 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon this Monday, the 17th of August. And I want to welcome our first guest this afternoon, Colleen Goodrich from Annie Hills. Welcome to the show, Colleen.
Thank you.
Colleen is here to talk about an exciting thing that's going to be happening this Friday. The Mayor's Awards for the Arts are happening. We've had some of the other recipients on prior Juno Afternoon shows. And Annie Hills is going to be receiving the award for Business Leadership for the Arts. Annie Hills is celebrating 40 years of being a favorite shop for Juno, for locals and visitors alike, with a very wide selection of Alaskan artwork. But this is what you may not know. Annie Kales has been instrumental in supporting and promoting local Alaskan artists since it opened. And by being a store that serves tourists as much as it serves local Alaskans, it helps Alaskan artists reach the widest possible audience. Always very, very closely involved in First Friday from the start. Annie Kales believes that being an active member of the community and promoting a vibrant downtown Juno is an important thing to do. And throughout the years, Annie Kales has remained a staple in downtown, attracting new and repeat customers from every part of Juno, Alaska, and indeed around the world. Annie Kales donates to various Juno charities, is an active member of the Downtown Business Association, and is overall just dedicated to making Juno a vibrant and exciting place to live by bringing arts and craft to Juno. So, Colleen, that's a lot of information. That's from the program for the Mayor's Awards for the Arts, and I just want to say congratulations on this award.
Thank you. We're really thrilled.
Yeah, well,
quite an honor.
I bet almost everyone listening has been to Annie Kales at one point. Most people have probably been there on a First Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
And it's an exciting and vibrant place. So tell us a little bit about how long you have been involved with Annie Kales.
Well, I started working there in 1999 on Thursdays, and I worked there because I wanted a lamp that was showing in the window, and I wanted it really bad. It's beautiful. And so that was the way I worked to get the lamp. And after that, I started showing my jewelry in there. I make jewelry, and I've had it in there since, I think, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And then I worked for Darby doing books, and then it came up for sale, and we made it work, and we bought it.
Excellent. Yeah. How long ago did you take over the business?
2.5 years ago.
2.5 years.
Yeah.
So certainly you have caught your stride, and it's no longer quite as – and it wasn't entirely new to you because you'd been there for so long before you actually became the owner.
Yeah.
Well, so over your time there, what have your thoughts been about how to be both a profitable business but also be a good supporter of the community? Is it difficult to balance those two competing desires?
Well, it depends on how profitable you want to be, I guess. But I really think that it's such – I mean, I'll stumble over my words a bit, but one of the reasons that I felt so strongly about buying it and keeping it going was that I think it's a really important store – on a bunch of different levels. And so as an artist myself and to the artists that we support, I think it's incredibly important. I think it's important to buy small, shop locally, all that kind of thing. And that includes the stores doing that, you know, that can. And so that's a large role that we play, and it gets people's work out there, whether they're an established artist or a new emerging artist. It's a way to get people out there. And we do that by carrying people all the time or showing them on First Fridays and then maybe keeping them all the time or not. It just depends on room and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing that we can do, because the locals are such an important part, and that's really we're a local store. We're here for the locals. And then having the local shop there allows us to support local organizations. So we donate whatever and whenever we can. And I try to do that all the time.
I know that a lot of artists are asked to donate their work to auctions and that sort of thing. And that's nice to do, but it kind of comes at the expense of being paid for their work. You as a gallery can play a valuable role as an intermediary.
Yeah.
If you're already selling some art from a particular artist, do you get permission from the artist before you in turn go ahead and donate that to a cause if it's something that you haven't? Because I don't know if you're doing it on consignment or if you're buying it outright wholesale and then reselling it.
Most of it we own. Most of it we have on wholesale, or we own through wholesale. So I can donate it. And, you know, a lot of times we take into account what the event is, what it's for, what the theme is, that kind of a thing, so that we can come up with something really fun, because we like to be a fun store. So if we can kind of match what we're doing to the event, that's always great to do.
And you want it to move as well.
Yeah.
You know, you can have the most beautiful, expensive piece of artwork, but if it goes to the wrong event, people may be afraid to bid on it.
Right.
And then that's not going to help anyone if it's there on the table at the end of the night.
That's right. And often we get, you know, we'll do gift certificates, which are, you know, a great thing that we sell, and it also is a good thing for an auction.
So over your time at the store, have you had some particularly exciting experiences when you've helped an artist do a first Friday, a first showing?
Yeah.
Maybe you want to share, because I'm sure I've been there for a few artists' first showings and seen all of their pieces sell out, and it's just a magical feeling. So you've seen a lot of that.
Yeah, and I have to say, just over since when I've had it, so the first one that I can really remember doing right off is Lindsay Smithberg, who was a young artist. She was 18 years old, and we showed her work. We were carrying it at the store, and we hosted her first gallery show, her first Friday event. It was awesome. She sold like crazy. Then last October, we showed four young women emerging artists. They were between the ages of 17 and I think like 27, 28 years old. And then most recently was Mercedes Munoz's show, and that was amazing. Her ceramic work was absolutely beautiful, and she sold every piece, and that was thrilling.
That was one of the ones I was referring to. I was there that night, and it was just incredible to see. And that was, of course, her grandmother, Ree, was able to be there that night.
Yeah, that was super special. That was, I mean, you know, who knew? And it was just so cool. I was so thrilled to be part of that. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, so we talked a little bit earlier about looking local first. Art is one of those things that's unique. And so unlike, you know, pharmaceuticals where you could buy them online or you could go to Fred Meyer, there's something about art that makes it valuable to purchase locally. Do you feel like it's becoming any easier for local artists to survive and be productive artists and make at least part of their living that way? And what can we do to help artists to succeed in that way?
Well, I don't know if it's any easier, because a lot of artists are going online now too. So they're, you know, I think that's good because it gives them more outlets for showing their work, but really it's something that you want to see and touch or look at in person. So I would say get out and go to all the galleries and the places that are in town, both downtown and in the valley. First Fridays in particular are a great chance to do that because the artists are featured, so there will be a free, you know, an artist at the whatever store is doing it or the museum or wherever at. And then that helps downtown, for instance, be very vibrant because we have also so many other great things going on with all the restaurants and fun things happening around town. So it just works all around. It makes it fun and exciting to be out and about.
And there have been some recent changes downtown. The Sobolov Center has opened up, and the State Museum has been closed for a while, but it's poised to reopen next year. Are you kind of excited to see all that get back into place and have the rising tide kind of lift all the boats?
Absolutely. I'm thrilled. I mean, I really think the more the merrier, and it makes it more vibrant. It makes it more exciting for everyone to have all of that going on. I think that it feels alive, and even if it's like, you know, today pouring down rain or gloomy sort of outside, there's still all this great stuff. And it doesn't have to be just First Friday. It's all the time. There's a lot going on.
Every day can be First
Friday.
Every
day, yes.
Well, to turn to the event this Friday, the Mayor's Awards for the Arts are going to be at the Jack this coming Friday, and it'll be right at 5:30, I think, is when the awards start.
Yeah, I think that's right, yeah.
I think 5 o'clock, they're hoping to have a brief annual membership meeting of the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council. And so tell me this, when did you find out that you were going to be winning the award, and how was that an exciting moment?
It was really exciting. I didn't really know anything about it, so it was a complete surprise. And I had an envelope dropped off with a letter in it with my name on the front, and I think it was in mid-July. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a donation request, and so I, you know, let it go for till the end of the day, and then I opened it up and I read it, and I was just so happy. It was great, and I think Annie's really happy too. It's just, you know, it's an exciting thing that really speaks to what she started in 1975.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Now, I know I've had people, when I've been calling for the Governor's Awards for the Arts as Arts Council Chairman, wonder if they were being served, you know, but with legal papers or something.
Exactly.
See, you never know what that urgent personal contact is going to be. So I'm glad you didn't turn the envelope away and refuse to sign for it. So you mentioned Annie and how happy she is about this, obviously the namesake of the shop. Mm-hmm. Who will be there representing Annie Kales at the awards on Friday? Will it be a large contingent, and are you all looking forward to it?
Well, I will get as many of, you know, the staff that can come that will be there who aren't working. And then my family will be there, which they all pretty much work in there anyway. And the only person, well, Annie won't be there, but my best friend, Terry Campbell, who's my right hand at the store, is out of town, and so is Wendy Glidman, who also just helps me so much. So I'll miss them a lot. But we'll get as many as we can.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is Colleen Goodrich, and she is here from Annie Kales, and she's going to be receiving the Mayor's Award for the Arts for Business Leadership in the Arts this coming Friday. Annie, obviously, congratulations, Colleen, a well-deserved honor, and congratulations to you for taking over a successful business and continuing to make it successful.
Thank you.
It's difficult sometimes when people who founded a business, they decide they want to move on. They can't always find the right buyer, and that business goes away. So I'm very pleased that Annie Kales is not an example of that.
Yeah.
It's an example of the kind that has been founded and is now, and it's under second owner, is just doing an outstanding job.
Thank you.
Anything else you want to share with our listeners here on a Juno afternoon?
The only thing I can say is if you want to kind of keep up on what's going on, like us on Facebook. We have our updated things on there all the time.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you so much, Colleen Goodrich from Annie Kales, and congratulations once again on your impending receipt of the Mayor's Award for Business Leadership in the Arts.
Thank you.
The Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 17th of August, 2015. It was on this date, 1982, the first compact discs for commercial release were manufactured in Germany. CDs originally designed to store and playback sound recordings, later modified to store data. The first CD commercially produced, sold on this date, was ABBA's 1981 album, The Visitors. It's the birthday of Evan S. Connell, 1924, Kansas City, author of the novels Mrs. Bridge and Mr. Bridge. It's the birthday of the mystery writer Steve Hawkinsmith, born Louisville, 1968, best known for his Holmes on the Range series of cowboy mysteries. It's the birthday of the Irish writer Oliver St. John Gogarty, Dublin, 1878. He was a surgeon and a throat specialist, but he preferred writing poetry and plays and semi-autobiographical novels like As I Was Going Down Sackville Street and Tumbling in the Hay and It Isn't This Time of Year at All. He was a sort of friend of James Joyce and the inspiration for the character Buck Mulligan in Ulysses, much to Dr. Gogarty's annoyance. He did not take James Joyce seriously as a writer. He liked Yeats much better, so it irritated him when people reminded him of who Buck Mulligan really was. It's the birthday of the poet Ted Hughes, born in West Riding, Yorkshire, 1930. First collection came out in 1957, The Hawk in the Rain. Ted Hughes became known for his dramatic mythological themes, sometimes writing from the point of view of animals, especially crow. Married the poet Sylvia Plath in 1956, who committed suicide 7 years later. He administered her literary estate, didn't talk about her publicly until his collection of poems, Birthday Letters, came out in 1998. It's the birthday of the writer who said, "Between two evils, I like to pick the one I haven't tried before." Mae West, born Brooklyn, 1893. Davy Crockett, born on this day, 1786, in Greene County, Tennessee, served 3 terms in the U.S. House of Representatives and was defeated by a lawyer named Andrew Huntsman, who had a peg leg. Davy Crockett said, "Since you have chosen to elect a man with a timber toe to succeed me, you may all go to hell, and I will go to Texas." And he left the next day and was killed the following year at the Battle of the Alamo. Here's a poem for today by Louise Glick, Telescope. There is a moment after you move your eye away when you forget where you are because you've been living, it seems, somewhere else in the silence of the night sky. You've stopped being here in the world. You're in a different place, a place where human life has no meaning. You're not a creature in a body. You exist as the stars exist, participating in their stillness, their immensity. Then you're in the world again, at night, on a cold hill, taking the telescope apart. You realize afterward, not that the image is false, but the relation is false. You see again how far away each thing is from every other thing. Telescope, a poem by Louise Glick from her collection Averno, published by Farrar, Straus, and Giroux, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, personalized brain training developed by neuroscientists to challenge memory and problem-solving through online games, Lumosity.com, and by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And it's about 21 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. This is Monday, the 17th of August, and you're listening to a Juno Afternoon. And our next guest this afternoon are here to talk about the Juno Ice Field Research Program. I have two faculty members, Aaron and Matt, and two students in the program, Tig and Drew. And Tig, you're going to start off and tell me about Juno Ice Field Research Program. What is it?
The Juno Ice Field Research Program, it began in 1946 and began kind of as a summer kind of field research training program. As it went on, it was more about teaching students expeditionary skills, and also they're carrying out research annually, so we're building up a data set and learning more about glaciology throughout the program.
So it's a teaching opportunity, but also gathers some valuable data that's being used for analysis of ice field trends and things like that.
Yes, definitely, because in Alaska, the glaciers play a huge part in the ecosystems, in the coastal systems, so it's important to have this data and to be able to monitor it yearly so we can build on that and use that.
Excellent. Now, before we went on the air, you referred to it as GIRP. So there is an acronym, G-I-R-P.
Yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure if I call it GIRP, people don't think I'm being irreverent or inaccurate or anything.
No, perfect.
So it started a long time ago, and it's evolved quite a bit since then. What is the program currently mostly involved with today? Maybe, Matt, you want to tell me as a faculty member.
Sure. Today, the program is mostly involved with training of young scientists. So most of the participants are undergraduate scientists in the environmental sciences. They commonly receive university credit and field training towards their degree at their home institution.
And they're not entirely from UAS. They can be from anywhere and receive credit in this program.
Correct. And actually, this year we don't have any students from UAS, and that's one thing we like to appeal is if people in the Juno community are interested or know people who might be interested for the 2016 season, to look for the application process on JunoIcefield.com.
Okay. And so a student going to UAS who wasn't signed up for this year would still be able to do so?
In the next year, yes.
Okay, very good. And there's a website. Just say that really quickly.
JunoIcefield.com.
Okay, JunoIcefield.com. And so maybe let me ask you, Drew, what are some things that you've enjoyed, assuming there have been some things you've enjoyed about the Juno Ice Field Research Program, what would those be?
Oh, wow, so many. I think what's wonderful about GIRP is that it's really a three-pronged experience. So there's the academic portion, lectures, and you're learning about all the features around you. The outdoor classroom is the best place to learn. But there's also, it's an expeditionary environment, so there's the adventure portion, learning mountaineering skills and how to safely conduct research in the field. And then there's the field work, which you get a whole slew of talented scientists coming in, usually almost always past GIRP students who started their careers at GIRP, who are really devoting their time. And I think just having all of those aspects combined was extremely exciting.
It's a continuum, basically, and so you're learning from alumni, and they kind of know what it was like to be in your shoes as a student, and that's a virtuous cycle that feeds on itself, I guess. So what is going on with Monday Night Presentations, then? This is an outreach effort where people who were not involved with the program were able to benefit from some of the things that it's producing?
Yes, we're very excited about tonight's presentation. It's at 8 p.m. at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, and it's not your run-of-the-mill science talk. It's an interactive open house. We'll be having stations that the students are at where community members can go up and interact with the students. And the stations will be grouped around questions that we hear a lot on, as GIRPers, such as, what's life like on the ice field? And how do we travel on the ice field? And what's the health of the glacier? And what's the future of glacier research? And how do we see through ice or image ice? A whole host of questions that we get all the time. So we're really looking forward to having these interactive stations. We'll have some of our gear. We've got pictures. I think it should be a very lively evening, and we're really looking forward to it.
And is this evening's Monday night presentation the first one of the season?
We did a presentation in Atlin, British Columbia, two nights ago. That's where the students exit off the north end of the ice field. But yes, this is the first presentation in Juneau.
And that's going to be 8 o'clock tonight at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center.
Yes.
Now, as far as, is there any admission charge?
It's free.
Okay, it's free and open to the public. What about parking? I know if you go during the day on a busy day, there's going to be a ton of big buses and stuff out there. But this evening, do people need to worry about carpooling or hitchhiking or anything like that?
I'd always recommend carpooling and getting out to the glacier, but there should be plenty of parking.
Okay, yeah. Very good. One question you may get asked a lot, I had some friends in town the week before last, and I took them out there on the way to the airport, as we often do, and the question came up, what's the difference between a glacier and an ice field? And I tried to stumble through having to be a certain mass and a certain amount of movement. Can one of you actually give me the real definition so I don't make it up again and mislead any more people? I know, all four of you know, but who's chomping at the bit to provide that crucial bit of education for me?
I'll give it a shot, I guess. So an ice field is just an area, a large expanse of ice, and then the glacier is when it starts to flow. So the ice field is largely the accumulation zone, so that's probably the area where it accumulates the snow, and that builds up over time. And then when enough snow gathers and then it begins to flow under its own weight, that is when it becomes like a glacier, and that usually like evolves and around falls in the rock and flows out from the ice field. So most glaciers, particularly the ones here like the Taku and the Mendenhall and the Lemon Creek and the Herbert, of course, they all originate from the Juneau ice field, and they're all the glaciers that come from there.
Okay, so one ice field can generate a whole bunch of different glaciers moving down towards tidewater.
Yeah. Correct.
All right. And speaking of the Lemon Glacier, I was over at North Douglas this weekend. It doesn't look very, very big. Is it receding as well?
It is receding, yes. It has a negative mass balance, so a loss in mass. Also, it's a very low snow year, which we experienced firsthand on the glaciers, and so that's probably quite visible in the Lemon Creek.
Right. Well, that's one of the things people have noticed. You know, even non-scientists, you look up there and you say, my goodness, that doesn't look like it used to look. But that's kind of the...
Yeah, that seems to be the way the health of the glaciers this year is. As a result of like the low snow year, we see a lot... the Taku is the only advancing glacier we have at the moment. But even that still is losing mass. As one of my friends, Lara, she conducted a GPS survey, and she noticed that in the last 20 years or so, there's been a decrease of 26 meters in the height across just the longitudinal, so just down the middle of the glacier, of 26 meters, which is quite phenomenal to be seeing a change in such a short period of time.
Right, so even though the glacier itself might be moving forward, it's getting a lot smaller top to bottom.
Yes.
Wow. Well, all very good food for thought. Now, this is a preview of tonight's Monday night presentation we've had. Are there going to be future Monday night presentations as part of the Ice Field Research Program?
In the future, definitely, we will come back at the end of the season. We'd also like to do, hopefully in the future, the fireside chats, so have an affiliate speak in the wintertime after the tourist season in regards to the health of the Juneau Ice Field and research that's going on the Juneau Ice Field.
Excellent. Well, a lot of great information out there, and again, this is free and open to the public tonight at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, a Monday night presentation by the participants, several of the participants in the Juneau Ice Field Research Program, and it's probably appropriate for, you know, middle school kids and on up who would be able to understand what's going on and interact with the students and ask them questions.
Certainly. It's a family-friendly event. Come one, come all.
All right. And if people once again want to learn more about the Juneau Ice Field Research Program, and this is a particular shout-out to any UAS students who might want to sign up and participate in the program, where would they go to do that?
JuneauIceField.com. And I'd also like to mention it's also open to upper-level high school students, so juniors and seniors. So if you're at Thunder Mountain High School or JDHS, also keep this in mind if you're interested in an expedition on the Juneau Ice Field.
Excellent. All right. Well, I want to thank you all very much. Any other words of wisdom you want to share with our listeners on a Juneau afternoon today? Well, then I want to thank you, Aaron, Matt, Tig, and Drew, again, from the Juneau Ice Field Research Program. And I hope you have a great turnout tonight at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center for your Monday night presentation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
By the ice.
Good afternoon. It's Monday, the 17th of August. I'm Ben Brown, and it's about 33 going on 34 minutes after the hour. This is a Juno afternoon, and my guest now is Bobbi Epperle, who's here from the Faith Community School. She's a parent of Faith Community School, and she's here to talk about the Faith Community School Fun Run. So welcome, Bobbi.
Thank you very much.
So tell us a little about Faith Community School.
Faith Community School is a nonprofit, non-denominational Christian school. And it's a tuition-based school, so parents do pay for their students to go. It goes kindergarten through eighth grade.
And where is it physically located?
It is located at the Auk Bay Bible Church upstairs.
Okay. All right, very good. And so Faith Community School, because it charges tuition, doesn't have a big budget for extracurricular activities, and so there are some fundraising activities that parents help put together, and the Fun Run is one of those.
Definitely. We try to organize different fundraising activities throughout the year to help fund things like getting new desks for the children in their classrooms and getting bus service to field trips and other extracurricular activities, trying to earn enough money to get risers for their plays and their musicals that they do throughout the year.
And so this is an important fundraiser.
It is a very important fundraiser.
And the Fun Run itself is going to be on the 12th of September, which is a Saturday coming up.
It is. It's on September 12th at Sandy Beach. The run is at noon. And this Fun Run is special because it is actually a color run where you get pounded with color as you run through the trail and through the course. It is a 5K, and it can be either walked or run. And it is geared towards families, so bring your kids. They'll have a wonderful time getting pounded with color or plastered with color, I should say, and looking like a rainbow in the end.
And I think there's been a color run up in Anchorage for the past few years. The color is kind of this powdered cornstarchy stuff that explodes on the runners as they go by, and they end up being kind of caked with it, like you said. And they'll be all rainbow different, like a clown's hair, basically, at the end.
Yes.
Good, good. Of course, that's all biodegradable, so don't worry about it there being anything harmful on the course.
It's also non-toxic.
And it's non-toxic as well.
Yes.
Great. And so if people want to participate, do they need to register in advance, and are there fees involved for participating in the community fun run?
Yes. Actually, we are hoping that most everybody will register by August 31st in time to guarantee an event shirt. You can register on active.com. You can register at Nugget Alaskan Outfitter. You can register at Pavitt Health and Fitness or the Downtown JRC or the Valley JRC. There, of course, it's a fundraiser, so there are fees. It's $30 for adults, $20 for teenagers, 13 through 18, and for children, 5 through 12, I believe it was $15, and then for under 5, it's free.
Now, of course, when you have people who are under 5 running all the way up to adults, this isn't a competitive event. It's not a timed race, and people can even walk if they want to.
Definitely. And we're not there to judge you. So you're there to have fun with your family and your kids, to have a good time, be safe. If you can't finish the course, by all means, you don't have to. It's not timed. Please walk it if you want to walk. Run if you want to walk. It is a 5K. We are doing it at Sandy Beach. And it is a course that you're going to have to do twice because Sandy Beach doesn't have too much room down the trail.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. So if it's 5 kilometers overall, is it the loop of the old Treadwell buildings going around and coming back to Sandy Beach, or does it diverge from there?
Well, we're going to go through the woods, and at the end of the trail is a gate, and we're going to turn around at the gate, and we're going to come back, and then we're going to go along the backside to the Treadwell Arena and do the loop around the block. And then we're going to go back to the gate and then do the loop one more time and end at the ball field.
Okay, so a double loop over in Sandy Beach on Saturday, the 12th of September. Has this fun run happened in prior years?
This is our first annual color run.
Okay.
So this is a first for us. Definitely a learning experience, but I think it's going to be a great fundraiser for the school.
Right. Well, of course, and so it's the first year. You want to make sure you have as many people as participating as possible.
We do have a cap of 500 people.
All right. So, if people aren't registered, they might not only miss out on getting a shirt, but they might not be able to participate at all if they don't get signed up.
Yeah, don't wait till the last minute. You really need to get registered.
Okay. So if people want to learn more about Faith Community School, is there a website that they can go and
there
do that at?
Definitely a website. Please go to www.fcsjuno.com.
Okay.
And we are actually having an open house tomorrow from 4 to 6 p.m., students are going to be bringing in their supplies and meeting their teachers and seeing their classroom. But we encourage those who are interested in the school to stop on by and check it out.
And that's going to be at Ogpe Bible Church out near the old Fisherman's Bend.
Exactly.
Okay.
Upstairs.
All right. So the Faith Community School Fun Run, again, coming up on Saturday, the 12th of September. It's a color run. It's a family event. Active.org?
www.active.com.
Active.com.
And look it up under Juno.
Okay.
And it'll be there.
Very good. Well, this sounds like a fun event. And, of course, we've had really nice Saturdays lately. Anything else that you'd like to say for our listeners on a Juno afternoon today?
Well, I would like to say thank you to several of our sponsors.
Sure.
We've got LG Rayfield and Mertz. We've got Verizon, Flying Squirrel Espresso, Gas and Go, the Art Department, Riemann Yo's Gallery, Ron's Apothecary Shop, Valley Paint Center, Western Auto, Salon 2211, and many, many more.
All right, those are important sponsors without which this fun run would not be possible.
Exactly.
Well, good. Well, I appreciate you identifying all those sponsors because, you know, without sponsors, nothing happens in a town like Juneau.
Wonderful support from the businesses in Juneau. We thank them tremendously.
All right, good. Well, thank you so much, Bobby Epperly, for coming in to share information about the Faith Community School Fun Run. And we've given you some web addresses to go look for more information. So I very much hope you have a great turnout on Saturday, the 12th of September. And thanks once again for being here on a Juneau afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
This is Bird Note. By late summer, birds hatched in spring have left the nest and likely seen the last help from their parents in getting fed. Where do they go? Hang around the old neighborhood or strike out for new lands? The young of migratory birds will head south in late summer or fall, in the pattern of their species. But as a general rule, non-migratory birds born this spring will need to find an unoccupied territory, so they disperse more widely than the adults that are already established. In the case of the Buick's wren, closely studied in Oregon, The young songbirds said goodbye to their parents' territory by 5 weeks of age. They dispersed to suitable countryside within half a mile to a mile. And within another few months, young males had already set up their own territories. But compared to young bald eagles, young Buick's wrens are mere stay-at-homes. When new-fledged bald eagles leave their parents' territory, they embark on a nomadic life, sometimes flying hundreds of miles in a day, that may take them all the way across the continent. When they reach adulthood 4 years later, though, they'll often nest roughly in the area where they were hatched, give or take about 250 miles. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Duct tape, oh, where is my duct tape? My old boat is leaking, my window is cracked. My poor heart is broken, I'll fix it with duct tape. Fix it with duct tape until you come back. Duct tape is better than duct tape. My old boat is leaking, my window is cracked. My poor heart is broken, throughout your duct tape. I'll roll beneath your pillow at night. Duct tape, and where is going to be? I have tried every single color, each rose in my tracks. My old boat is leaking, my window is cracked. My poor heart is broken, I'll fix it with duct tape. Fix it with duct tape until you come back.
And it's just about 44 minutes after the hour on a Juno afternoon this Monday, the 17th of August. I'm Ben Brown, and our next guest this afternoon is Tenny Bentz from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and she's here to talk about the Alaskans Afield Fall Series of Outdoor Skills Classes. So welcome, Tenny, to a Juno Afternoon.
Yes, thank you for having me.
And so this sounds like an exciting opportunity, not just for women, but for all sorts of people to learn about outdoor skills. Tell us more about this, please.
Yes, so we are Becoming an Outdoor Woman program was very successful, and that provides women with outdoor skills, and we do it in a long weekend in the spring, and so we decided that we wanted to offer the same sorts of classes to the public so that anybody would have the opportunity to go out and learn skills. So we've started the Alaskans Afield program, and we offer different series of classes. So we're just getting ready to do our fall series, which is going to be hunting related. And so we have any of our shooting classes, we have it's available to people who are 10 years old and older, just because of the type of classes that we're offering. And then we have small classes too, so it's really individualized attention, which is really nice.
Absolutely. And so this is a newer program than the women's program.
It is. So this is our second fall that we've done classes. And so we always try different types of classes. So this fall we're offering a shotgun class. So this weekend from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. we're offering a shotgun class. So for people who are interested in either learning how to shoot a shotgun, who have maybe a little bit of experience and just want to get better with some individualized instruction, it's open to just about anybody who wants to get more skills. And then we have a fly fishing class also this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. for people who want to head out on Montana Creek and see if they can hook up with some dollies or any of the fish that are out there. So those two classes are being offered this weekend.
So these are sort of one-off mini classes, not classes that require repeat attendance over a few days or weeks.
No. There you can sign up for the entire series. You can sign up for one class at a time, whatever's is most interesting to you. So we're setting up the shotgun class with the intent of offering a waterfowl hunting class on September 4th and 5th. So people who are interested in learning to waterfowl hunt, but they've never had any experience even shooting shotgun, can take the shotgun class and then go out and learn how to go out onto the refuge, which is in our own backyard, right out by the airport, and be able to go harvest food locally, which is really a cool opportunity that we have here.
So it sounds like there's a pretty wide array of classes offered. Where would someone go and learn about when these classes are, what they are, and certainly if there's a prerequisite? So if you need to take shotgun before waterfowl hunting, they don't miss the first one and then show up not knowing how to use a shotgun, placing everyone at grave risk of personal injury.
Well, yes, that's a good point. So our classes are designed, there's always a really strong safety emphasis. So we won't actually be shooting for the waterfowl hunting class. So you don't have to go out and take the shotgun class first. But if you're interested in more information, the easiest way to find the program is just to Google Alaskans Afield. So the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has put together this series, and we're calling it Alaskans Afield. And so a quick search, or you can go to www.alaskansafield.adfg.alaska.gov.
But so Googling might be easier.
Googling would be easier, yes.
Unless you wrote that down really quickly, good.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So Alaskans Afield, it sounds like it would be applicable not just to Juneauites or Southeasterners. Are these programs available in other parts of the state?
They are. So we are offering them in Fairbanks and then in the Mat-Su Valley as well. And then here in Juneau, we have our programs that we're starting up. But they've been pretty successful. We're having really great turnout across the state. So there's definitely a need. People are interested in learning more skills.
Are there any fees involved for Alaskans to participate in these programs?
There are. So the fees are very minimal, and we're just trying to recuperate costs. And so for the shooting classes, so we have for the shotgun class, it's a $30 fee because we have to pay for the ammunition. And then our other classes, so we have fly fishing, the waterfowl hunting, and then we're also offering a deer hunting class on September 19th, and those are all $20. And you can bring a youth under 18, and they are free.
All right, so really kind of a two for the price of one if you bring someone under 18 with you.
Yeah, absolutely. We encourage families to come. It's a great opportunity to come together as a family and get outdoors. So.
And let me ask who the faculty are. Are they fellow employees of Fish and Game like yourself, or is it a mixture of some Fish and Game and some non-Fish and Game employees?
It's a mixture. So we have this weekend we have some men from the Juneau shooting, from the shotgun club that are going to come out and help teach the classes. Riley Woodford, who's a Fish and Game employee, will teach the deer hunting class. And then Ryan Scott, who is the regional supervisor for Fish and Game for wildlife, is teaching the waterfowl hunting class. So we just have a wide variety of people, and they're all wonderful instructors.
And I'm sure many listeners recognize the name of Riley Woodford as the host of Sounds Wild.
Yes, absolutely. He does a great job with the deer hunting class.
So if you want to meet Riley Woodford in person, it's an added bonus if you sign up for his deer hunting class.
Yes, there you go. He is very entertaining.
Now, it's a time in state government where everything can't happen for everyone. So it's important for this program to continue that you have some people participate in it. Are there maximum numbers or minimum numbers that you need for each of the classes? Are you concerned about getting minimum enrollment, or are you more concerned that you're going to have too many people sign up and have to turn people away?
Well, we have a minimum number of 10 people for each class just because we have to recuperate the costs and then pay our instructors a stipend. But we really try to limit the number of people, depending on the class, to no more than 15. We just did a riflery class, and that was limited to 10. So it just depends on the type of class and how much instruction and individual attention they need. So we encourage people to sign up early. We have canceled classes before for not meeting minimum enrollment, which in this series of classes is looking pretty good. They're starting to fill up quickly.
All right, and so that was my next question. Is there people want to Google Alaskans Afield? They find out the course. They know that they want to sign up for it. Is there a deadline? Because you mentioned there's some coming up this weekend, so I imagine people need to register for those rather sooner than later.
Yes, definitely sooner than later. So we'll wait until the shotgun class is almost full. The fly fishing class still has space available, so that one, there's a chance that it might end up being canceled. But register early if you're interested, and then we'll let people know by Friday afternoon whether or not the class will be offered the next day. And if the class gets canceled, we don't obviously charge. We hold off on charging credit cards until the class is actually done.
Very good. Are they the same offerings in Palmer or in the Matsu area and up in Fairbanks, or are there different courses being offered up there?
There's actually different types of classes. So they offer shotgun, archery, some of the shooting stuff. They focus more on large games, so they did a moose hunting class, and they've done tracking classes. And so it's just kind of when we have people sign up for the classes and they express interest in other skills they'd like to learn, we try to offer those sorts of classes. So they're all pretty much wildlife related, getting people outdoors and kind of going towards hunting fields. We did some map and compass and wild edibles. So it's not always hunting related. So if people are interested in just upcoming classes, maybe they don't want to necessarily learn how to shoot, you can go to that same website on Alaskans Afield and sign up for email notifications, and it will give you the information. So we'll send out, if we have a spring series with some, you know, other classes that are being offered, we'll let you know ahead of time so you can keep up with what's going on.
And, of course, you don't want to put together the spring roster while you're busy trying to fill up fall's classes. So you got to kind of do it as a rolling enrollment process.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll look at our spring classes in February and start organizing those.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like there's a lot available here through the Alaskans Afield Fall Series of Outdoor Skills Classes from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And again, Tenny has said the easiest way to hook yourself up with the information is just Google Alaskans Afield.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, there's a laborious, lengthier State of Alaska email address, or website address. But just Google Alaskans Afield, and that will solve most of your problems.
Yep, absolutely. The registration forms are there and calendars of events and everything else. So.
Excellent. Well, Tenny Bentz from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, thank you so much. Anything else you'd like to say for our listeners here on a Juneau afternoon?
Well, thanks, and we hope to see you guys outdoors.
All right. Thanks so much, Tenny.
Support for this station comes from the Augustus Brown Swimming Pool, located at 1619 Glacier Avenue in downtown Juneau, offering aqua aerobics Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. until 12 p.m., and stretch aquatics on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 a.m. until 11:45. Schedules for August are now available online. More information at 586-5325. Is open. Stop in for an afternoon of open skating Monday, August 10th, Wednesday, August 12th, and Friday, August 14th from 12:30 to 1:30 p.m. Drop-in pond hockey, stick and pucks, and freestyles are also scheduled this week and throughout the month. More information at juno.org/parksrec/ice rink or call the arena at 586-0410.
And it's a little less than 3 minutes before the hour. I'm Ben Brown. You've been listening to a Juno Afternoon this Monday, the 17th of August, 2015. We had some music there from Juno's own Glacial Erratics, their album Tides of Change. That was Stuck Together. Earlier we heard the Glacial Erratics song. We also heard the Duct Tape Madrigal, the Lou Nathanson song, as performed by Anchorage's Derry Ayres. So before we go to All Things Considered, another programming this afternoon, a quick look at the weather forecast from the National Weather Service. Today's forecast is for rain, a high around 59 degrees, southeast winds from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, becoming windy late, rain still likely, a low around 56 degrees, southeast winds from 10 to 20 miles per hour, increasing to 20 to 30 miles per hour with gusts to around 45 miles per hour late. Tomorrow, Tuesday, it'll be windy and rainy with a high around 59, and rain is likely through the week till we get to Wednesday and Thursday when it is going to be cloudier than rainy. So stay tuned for that. Tomorrow on a Juno Afternoon, Scott Burton is back, and he will be talking with Sitka filmmaker Ellen Frankenstein. Andy Klein will be here with information about a new brew from Alaskan Brewing Company, and you'll also learn how you can help the victims of this year's earlier Nepal earthquake. So that'll be tomorrow, Tuesday, the 18th of August, on a Juno Afternoon, live at 3 on KTOO-FM, and repeated at 4 on KRNN, Arts and Culture for Alaska's Capital City. Thanks so much for listening, and have a great afternoon.